Gaming in the Six. I'm your host, Christine Chubb. With me, as always now, Momin Qureshi.
Hi, hi.
And Steve Leung.
Hello. Are we here always?
We're being very liberal and optimistic about the term always.
As I say, very, very, very liberal with the term always.
Momin, you were here in the last episode.
I was.
Steve, you were here two episodes ago. I feel like we're creating a pattern.
We're finishing 2018 strong. That's what I know.
I mean, Robertson.
Robertson.
That's how long it's been. You don't even remember his name.
No, I know. That was me. I said it wrong last time. That's twice.
Even Patrick was on last week's show. Come on now.
Right? We're bringing the band back together slowly but surely.
Band on the run.
So let's look at the year 2018. It started off on a weird note for our little show and then slowly built up a little bit. And then
you can say that, but I think this is the year our show was born, birthed into the podcast sphere. I promise never to say that again.
But it's accurate, though.
We should probably edit that out.
We just lost to whatever listeners we had. They're all gone now.
I'm sorry, one listener.
Yeah. Goodbye.
So let's talk about the year that was in the world of video games. We had
year in review.
Some very interesting games come out. We did the Game Awards a few weeks ago. Not a lot of surprises. But will any of these games that were awarded end up on our Games of the Year list? I don't know. First, let's go to you, Steve. How was the year in video games in your perspective?
2018 was an immensely strong year. If you were a PlayStation owner, a Nintendo Switch owner, again, like the second year of the Switch, like is a pretty damn good follow up year. Not so much if you're an Xbox owner. And every year is good if you just play PC. So overall, 2018 was pretty good, unless you only play on the Xbox. In which case, I'm sorry, but like at least they had a good E3 presentation.
Yeah, we've got a lot to look forward to in the next year to 2 years.
Did Xbox even have a good exclusive this year? Like one good exclusive this year?
State of Decay 2, I liked.
Okay.
And of course,
I was just looking for one. You gave me one.
Forza Horizon 4, which
always.
I truly enjoyed.
Good old reliable Forza.
Right?
This was a great year, particularly if you were a PlayStation 4 owner, because, once again, Sony had a number of exclusives that just blew everything out the water, essentially, and they were very much on display during the Game Awards that we saw them.
Yep.
Right? So this brings me to some of my favorite games of the year. So I got on my list. This isn't in any particular order except for like what was my favorite game of the year, God of War, the game that won Game of the Year. I did have my issues with it because I did like the old style of God of War a little more when Kratos was angrier, and the combat system was a little more fluid, a little more combo based.
Fatherhood, man, it changes you.
But yes, that's exactly it.
Mellows you out.
For those who did not like the old God of Wars, did not like Kratos's, it's not even one dimensional, it's like a dimension, right? It's like half a dimension. He's just, that was it. then this God of War will appeal to you much more. Like, he's a much more complex character. Atreus is a very charming character. And the dynamic that works between them, it straight up created one of the best stories of the year. So God of War is definitely on my list of recommended games of the year. The next two are, this should not be a surprise for anyone who knows me, but they're fighting games.
Shocking!
I'm surprised that it took you this long to get to it, even though you only named one game before it.
So as everyone knows, like one of my most anticipated games from last year was Dragon Ball FighterZ, and I loved that game when it came out this year. It's like I as a gigantic Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball nerd myself my entire life, it was my favorite cartoon ever. It delivered on so many ways for me, like as a faithful recreation of so many moments and animations and like the characters themselves from Dragon Ball, just like the attention to detail that they put into the characters. As a fighting game, it started off a little flawed, but then subsequent patches, it kind of balanced itself out, and it got pretty fun. I still sunk like at least 400 to 500, maybe even more hours into it over the year.
Damn.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
Oof.
So like I was clearly having fun playing it, playing online, just like and like doing combos and stuff. It's made by Arc System Works, who does the Guilty Gear series, mm-hmm. which is a very beloved fighting game series of mine. The other fighting game is also another Arc System Works game. It's Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle, which I think was the best fighting game to come out this year. And for those that don't know what it is, it's this weird amalgamation between Blaze Blue, which is like a fighting game series that's been going on for about 10 years now, a weird cartoon called Ruby that I had never heard of before until I started playing this game. And it has these four girls, like Ruby, Weiss, Yang, and Blake, and I don't know, that they're very anime, these girls. Like I don't really know I don't know much about this series, except that like they're pretty cool fighting game characters. Another series, Undernight Inbirth, which is like another like obscure kind of like fighting game series, which has very, very cool characters. And the fourth one is from Persona 4, like the Persona 4 fighting game. So it's called P4U. So characters from these four franchises come together. It's a 2v2 versus kind of game. And it had like a lot of really, really interesting mechanics that I won't bore people with. But it was an excellent fighting game. I had a lot of fun with it. Like I probably played that most with a lot of my friends. So if you like fighting games, I recommend both of them. They are both excellent.
What's it called?
Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle.
That sounds more like a Mountain Dew flavor than it does a game.
My fourth favorite game of the year. It recently just came out, but I'm having fun with it already. Is Smash Brothers, mm-hmm. which is like it's like a pseudo fighting. I mean, like I view Smash Brothers as like a two genres simultaneously. It's a party game because you can throw in all the items and have a bunch of people over and have a grand old time.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also just be like a traditional fighting game when you decide you wanted to take off all the items, make the stages less. You can tone down all the stages to be less crazy. And you can just go one-on-one and treat it like a fighting game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's, like, 76, like, characters with even more. My only gripes with Smash Brothers is unlocking the characters. It's an incredibly tedious, asinine experience. Mm. Like, they should all be unlocked right from the get-go.
Agreed.
Because there's nothing that spoils a party when you have a bunch of people who want to play Smash Brothers. There's nothing that spoils that more than, like, oh, dude, like, where's blah, blah, blah? I was hoping to play yada, yada.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just pick any character, and it's like, oh, I haven't unlocked that dude yet, because, like, I haven't even seen him flash across yet.
I don't understand why they're locked. It doesn't make any sense to me. I understand if you play as a particular character and you have to unlock certain attributes over time, sure. Like, abilities over time, sure. But why is, you know, Mario or Pikachu or whoever the character is locked?
It's like the original eight from Smash 64. So that includes Mario and Pikachu and Link, right. Samus, or
Kirby,
yeah. But like that's all you get from the very beginning, and that's all you get right out of the box. And then you have to play, these as you play every 10 minutes. So I think a way it breaks down, you'll get like a here comes a new challenger, and you have to beat the CPU character to unlock that character. And it could be any character, right? So it could be immediately the character that you want to play. So like if you want to play like Marth, like Marth has been your main since Melee, that Marth could come within the first 10 minutes of you playing. Marth could come within like the 10 hours of you playing the game.
That's such a terrible design flaw,
right? And
Steve, how is this on your game of the year list? I don't understand.
because it is a fun game, and like and if you like video games, and just in general, there's something in this game
I think people
for
listen to the show
you
do.
To enjoy. Like you have to absolutely know nothing. Like, have never seen a video game in your life to find nothing to appreciate within Smash Brothers. It could be a playable character. It could be an assist trophy. It could be, like, a theme of music. Like, there's at least one thing, no matter how minuscule and how small, if you like video games, you'll find one thing in Smash Brothers Ultimate that you will enjoy.
Right. I haven't played it yet. I'm supposed to play it over the Christmas break with my brother-in-law because he just got a Switch. But my
has he unlocked the characters?
He only got it a few days ago, so I doubt it.
Well, and you better text him right now and say, get unlocking characters, because otherwise, you guys will be playing, and it could make for kind of a fun moment. But every 10 minutes, you guys are playing with
Christmas
each other.
Day, so yeah. And we're having like a bunch of people over. But my thing, my bigger problem with it is so much, if not all of the advertising for this game was based on, all these characters. We got all your favorites are here. Everybody's in this game. We didn't leave anybody out except for Wario, but we didn't leave anybody out.
I believe Wario is in there.
But if that's how you've packaged
and
sold this game.
And Waluigi's an assist trophy.
But I mean, if that's how you've packaged and sold this game, I think it's a little unfair to have them all locked when the game starts, except for the 8.
I mean, like, I got into a small debate about this with Riley, Riley Little, our friend.
Like,
the keys, he's obsessed with Smash Brothers, right? Yeah. And he defended unlocking the characters because it essentially kind of harkens back to, like, the way that the old traditions of the game, right? Because, like, it was a thing, particularly, you know, like, throughout the entire series, right, where, yes, you had to go through a single-player mode, or just like, as you play, here comes a new challenger approaches, and you beat the CPU, and you unlock the character, and it's a great moment, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, that was when the roster was not this gigantic, right? And if you're only looking forward to playing, I don't know, like if you only want to play like Ridley, like one of the new characters that was introduced for Smash Ultimate, and it takes you like 12 hours or so because you might be really bad at the game, but you're still grinding through trying to unlock these characters. But it took you that long just to get this one character that you just wanted to play. It's like, that is like exhausting. That's terrible. Everything should just be open for you right off the bat, and then I want to play that guy. And
agreed.
I don't care. And I don't care for the argument. Seeing all these characters can be overwhelming. It's like, well, that's kind of the point. You should be like so mesmerized by this character select screen because oh man, everything is here, right? And also, just like I said, this will be played as a fighting game, as a competitive game. So think of the poor like tournament organizers who will be sending their like legion of like volunteers just to unlock characters to prepare for a tournament, right? Because like anyone could play any character, and if they see like, hey, why isn't Roy unlocked? And like, oh, sorry, dude, we haven't unlocked that character yet on this Switch. You're like, well, why are we running this tournament in the first place? It's a terrible, terrible thing. Like, I don't even care if Nintendo did a thing where just like, listen, if you pay X money, we'll unlock all the characters for you. I would have done that because as an old person now, I also don't have that much time to dedicate to just like grinding through every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
To try to unlock characters. It's a tedious,
terrible
experience.
Well, you got to play 400 hours of other stuff too, right?
Yeah. Like there are other games to play.
Yeah.
Right? So
amazingly, this is still on Steve's Game of the Year list.
It is a very, very fun game when you eventually get everything.
Right.
The problem is trying to get there, you may lose people on the way to the journey, which I guess Nintendo doesn't care because people have already put down like the $80, $90 it costs to pick up this game in the first place right now.
Right.
So I guess you win, Nintendo. Fastest selling Smash Brothers game of all time. You win.
Do you have your game of the year left?
Yes.
All right.
And my final game of the year, it's a role-playing game, which should not surprise anyone. It's Dragon Quest XI.
I mean, I should have been I was expecting something off the board, and that's what I got.
Dragon Quest XI. It's obviously like the latest iteration of a very long-running Japanese role-playing game series. The Dragon Quest series kind of created the JRPG genre as we know it. Like the very first Dragon Quest, I think, is called Dragon Warrior in Japan. And this has like Akira Toriyama's art, and Akira Toriyama is the creator of Dragon Ball. if you like Japanese role-playing games, you're not going to find any this year that's better, essentially.
Well, there you go. Steve's top five games of the year. Momen.
Okay, so here's the thing. My game of the year is Open and Shut Case, without a question, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That game was awesome. It is still awesome, and I intend to play more of it over the Christmas break. Especially for a game that had so much hype built around it. It was coming for like 3 years. When Insomniac showed that first trailer that they were jumping ship to PlayStation a few E3s ago, it blew people's brains. A lot of expectations. And they nailed it so hard with this game. The storyline is great. The voice acting is great. The gameplay is great. Side missions are wonderful. A little repetitive, but there's times where I would just log on and play for 2-3 hours and just do nothing but side missions because I became a little obsessed with completing all the side missions, and you unlock all of them, and the way the game's broken up is you're in Manhattan and you got to play like the different parts of the city. And it was great. You just played like the different parts of the map, and you'd have to unlock different things in different parts of the map. It was so good. You can play as Miles Morales. You get to play as Mary Jane. You get to play as Peter Parker. So it's and more.
Spoiler alert, God.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the way they do the Sinister Six and the storyline, it's just all around. Insomniac really drilled it and made a beautiful, well played, fun, enjoyable game. And I think sometimes that is the key that's missing from some games, mm-hmm. is the real joy that comes from it. It's really fun to play this game. The swinging mechanic, which was, I think, the entire game hinged on it, is incredible. It's so much fun to swing through New York in this game. So really, Spider-Man is easily my game of the year. I am 100% sure they're going to make a sequel to this game. And frankly, I want it now. I don't want to wait 3 years or 4 years or however long it takes them to get it to me.
Well, Last of Us 2 is coming out next year.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's for when we're talking about what we're looking forward to next year. We'll get to that later. So for sure, that's game of the year for me. But I think if you're talking about what is the game of 2018, not necessarily the best game of 2018, but when you're talking about what is the game of the year.
I know what you're getting at.
There's no question it's Fortnite.
Yeah.
There's zero question. Whether you love that game, whether you hate that game, whether you like the way they sell stuff in the game, whether you like the way they stole dances, go see last week's episode. Whether you hate the fact that your kids play it, whether you hate the fact that you play it, whether you hate the fact that athletes play it, whatever you think about the game, we have not seen this kind of a phenomenon in the gaming world. And Steve, you and I did a whole episode pretty much about the phenomenon that is Fortnite. And for a quote, I'm putting in quotes, free-to-play game, because it does cost money in other aspects, it really made a smash into pop culture, the likes of which we maybe haven't seen since the original Mario Brothers.
I mean, Ninja was on the
Tonight Show.
Yeah, it was on. Yeah, with Fallon,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he was on the cover of Ninja, who's a Fortnite streamer, was on the Tonight Show. He was on the cover of ESPN, the magazine. There is teams, professional sports teams, that are concerned about their athletes and how much they play Fortnite. Every kid, if you go to a mall, if you go to a playground, is doing the dances from Fortnite. Parents know what it is. Like, everybody knows what this game is. So I'm not a Fortnite player. I've played it like maybe a handful of times with my niece and nephew. But if you're talking about what the game of 2018 is, to me, there is no question it is Fortnite for what it has accomplished, whether you like it or not, whether you play it or not. The way Fortnite has penetrated into the mainstream pop culture.
I guarantee you probably watched at least a minute of Fortnite.
Oh, I watched plenty because I've watched my nieces and nephews play. I've watched lots. I haven't played that much because I'm awful at shooters.
Because that seems like the real phenomenon of Fortnite. I mean, for years, the top of the Twitch viewership was always League. Like, League of Legends was unquestionably mm-hmm. the most popular game on the planet. All you had to do is go to Twitch and see how many people were watching at the time.
Mm-hmm.
2018, Fortnite, it's like, wait, Fortnite?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Fortnite? Fortnite Battle Royale? It's like, it's really that good? Because like when I had zero interest in it because I was playing PUBG as my Battle Royale game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And to a certain degree, I still have more fun with PUBG, but like, I can understand the appeal of Fortnite, and I understand the appeal of people wanting to watch Fortnite. Right. Yep. It can make, there's more engaging streaming personalities. It can make for pretty fun entertainment. Like, you know, like you're, instead of watching 2 hours on the television, you'll watch 2 hours of Fortnite and you'll have just as much fun.
Yep. And what of the many things that have worked for Fortnite, The fact that it's available on every platform, the fact that it's free to play. I know my nephew is in grade 8, and that's all everybody talks about, even to this day. It's maybe not as burning hot popular as it was 3 months ago, but it's still, like, that's what all his friends do. And when I say friends, I'm not just talking about his guy friends. I'm talking about his guy and girlfriends. They all play it. Now, the hard thing that Epic's going to have to figure out is how are they going to keep this piping hot into 2019, because that's always a hard thing with fads. But
particularly because COD's blackout, like the Call of Duty Battle Royale, people can just buy that separately. You don't have to actually buy Call of Duty anymore to get access to the COD multiplayer and / Battle Royale mode.
But the word you use there is buy, Steve. Buy. Whatever you think about the free-to-play model, the fact of the matter is you can get Fortnite installed on your system for $0 and 0 cents.
Yeah, and that's why League became so popular.
You can play it on your iPad. You can play it on your PC. You can play it on your Xbox. You can play it on your Switch. You can play it on your, what did I miss? PlayStation. You can play it anywhere. So game of the year for me, it's open and it's, I think I said open and shut with Spider-Man. It's a stamp of approval for Fortnite, even though I don't play it. But that's game of the year because of the way it's just done things that really very few games in the history of gaming have really managed to
do. I don't think any game has penetrated the mainstream like this game has.
I think Super Mario has as a whole, and especially back in the 80s, Christine, when we were kids, Super Mario Brothers kind of really found its way into the mainstream a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was to this level, but it definitely did made its way into the mainstream.
It was a game changer. It was like a game that, you know, for the first time your parents knew outside of Pong. And, like, there were cartoons about it. It became, there was cereal. It was a whole phenomenon of that very 80s nature.
But that's limited to, like, just games as a children's entertainment product.
Absolutely.
Fortnite has penetrated beyond that.
Also, it's been 35 years since then. Yeah. So that's how long it's been. But the way Fortnite has made its way is just, it's never been done before, I don't think.
Yeah.
So. Though that's it. That's all I've had to say in terms of games of the year.
Yeah, I would say game of the year and maybe news story of the year for gaming world as well. I don't really have a game of the year this year. I have a couple of games that I really liked, and there were things about those games that I really did not like. Mm. So it was hard for me to pick a specific game of the year. I'll talk about like a couple that I really enjoyed and what I didn't like and what I did like about them. First off the bat is Detroit Become Human, which was a game that came out pretty relatively early in the year comparatively. If you didn't know anything about it, it's from the makers of Heavy Rain. It was kind of a choose-your-own-adventure kind of story. It was something I was really looking forward to. It was about the idea of AI or robots becoming sentient, and then what happens and how do they merge into a normal society. And the thing about these kind of games, as is with Heavy Rain, is everybody gets a different outcome. Like, I had a very different outcome than most of the people I talked to, with the exception of the fact that I found with Heavy Rain, it was almost like you were talking about totally different games. Whereas, maybe it's just my friends, but I found a lot of us had about at least a third of the game to almost half of the game was relatively similar. And maybe it was just the moral compass was all pointing in the same direction. But other than, like, once it got to, like, really big turning points, that's where I found the change happen. But really good storytelling. Great acting. The mocap was fantastic. Or the performance capture wasn't even mocap. It was performance capture. It was really good. It was an interesting way to tell the story of race.
It's three separate stories, right?
It's three separate stories that all can combine into one story. Okay. And it's also like an underlying narrative about like race and human relations and what constitutes actual humanity and humanity versus the inhumanity of man. Like, it had a lot of deep layer stuff that was told on a very easily accessible kind of story. I felt like it had been a while since I had connected so hard with some of the characters. And I think it's because in a story like this, you can really choose the direction. So you can be like, yes, I'd really want to, you know, shoot all my morality and all my decisions into this one character, or I really just want to morph this person into who I want them to be.
Mm.
It had some negatives to it at times. I found it was a little bit predictable. And also, it was a game that I thought once I played, I would definitely go back and play again, and then didn't think about it for months. Completely forgot it existed.
That's what happened to me with Heavy Rain, because everyone was in on like how easy it is to get a platinum trophy in Heavy Rain, because you can just always go back and reload your save files to choose the different branches, right?
Yeah.
But, like, after I finished Heavy Rain, I was thinking of doing that. I was like, then I thought to myself, you know what? This was like the choice that I made. This is the ending that I got. I don't really want to go back and do it again.
And that's how I felt after Heavy Rain too.
Yeah.
And I got a horrible ending.
So yeah, Detroit Become Human was definitely one of the better games I played this year. It was a standout just for art direction, and the narrative and the acting was very, very good. I have recommended it to other people, but it's definitely a game that if you didn't like the kind of Heavy Rain storytelling, you wouldn't like it. You'd find it pretty boring.
Like, it's Quantic Dreams, right?
It is Quantic
Dreams. Yeah, so they have a very distinct style.
What was the one they made? Beyond...
Beyond Two Souls.
Also did the highly recommended, highly wacky Indigo Prophecy.
Mm. I haven't played that.
Oh, man, that game, it starts off so serious that it goes off the rails so deliciously. Like Nick Cage off the rails.
Oh, wow. That's both a terrifying and an exciting idea.
Yeah.
So the second game that I really, really liked this year was Far Cry 5. It had been a few years since I'd played a full Far Cry game, and I was very curious to go into the world of Hope, Montana, and enjoy a very twisted, cultish world that is the United States down there. And I really liked the Seed family, who are the bad guys, Joseph and John, and everybody's a J. I can't remember what everybody else's name is. Because it was so easy to be persuaded by. And maybe I'm just one of those people who could be persuaded by a cult. It's possible. But
interesting. Take down Steve.
You know, there's so many ideas when it comes to a cult where it's not like guys like Voss where they're just straight out crazy. These are guys who are just on the edge of things, and they just have ideals of a utopia that will never exist in modern times. But, you know, it was so easy to see, other than the excessive violence, the idea of getting sucked into this. And I really liked the beauty of the game. I liked that there was a lot of variety when it came to getting around, being able to fly around in airplanes, being able to go dune buggies, you know, all the different ways you can attack compounds. The only problem that I have with all Far Cry games is that the gameplay becomes so repetitive. And this game is broken up into three different quadrants, and you can choose which quadrant you want to go and take over first, or you can kind of do a little bit of each. But I did one, and then I was getting to go into the others and the others, and it almost felt tedious. Like, I felt like I had done so much in this first quadrant, like I'd almost completed it to its 100% in that one quadrant. I thought, God, do I really want to go over this again for like two more quadrants before I finally get to the main guy? Like, you know, so it was a game where I never finished it because the tedium of it was just overwhelming. But the part that I did play was phenomenal. Like, it was so good, and the fishing was good, and I got so angry at one point. I was casually trying to fish with my dog, and some rebel guys came out of nowhere and started attacking me, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm just trying to fish here. Leave me be, cultists. Leave me be.
Was it Far Cry 2 or Far Cry 3 where I was trying to get something in the water, and I think it was like a shark ate me or something.
That seems like a Voss 3 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happened. Far Cry is really good at his villains. They get villains right almost all the time.
They do.
The guy who played the villain this time around, what was it called? They call him the Father?
Yeah.
It was great.
Joseph Seed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very good, very charismatic, and I think that's what makes a Far Cry villain so interesting and terrifying, is that they are so charismatic, where you're kind of like, I like this guy, but also you're a terrible human being.
Also, you frighten me.
So, but I felt like it had been a while, like, no offense to Pagan Min, but I felt he didn't have the Voss and the kind of level that I had expected from Far Cry 3, whereas I feel all of the Seed family in their own way, with the exception of one brother, which I didn't really care for, really brought their own versions of craziness into the world. And
are you excited about like the expansion for Far Cry 5?
I am. I think it'll be weird.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's like Apocalyptica or something. It's in a post-apocalyptic setting.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be kind of weird. I don't know how much of it I'll play, but I'm definitely curious more than I'm excited. That's what I'll say. Curious more than excited.
Curiouser and curiouser.
So I'm going to say 3 is the no-brainer of no-brainers. It's Red Dead.
Yes, we specifically left it off because we know that you probably played it the most out of all of us.
Number one?
Except for maybe Colin.
Yeah, Red Dead 1. Let's go back to the John Marston
world. Finally
got
around to playing it 5 years later.
Yeah.
And it's
more
a good
like
game.
8 years later.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Red Dead, again, I had some problems with, but overall it was one of the better gaming experiences. It was definitely the game that I put the most time into. Mm-hmm. Like, I sat down there and was like, this is happening. I am just going to keep playing it. I was on my staycation. 3 days in a row, I played at least 12 hours each. I was sitting down. I'm like, nope, I got nothing else to do. We're just gonna cram right on through this and see what the world of Arthur Morgan is like. And yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's
pretty damn good.
It's an experience. Like, it to me is very much. I felt the same way I did with The Last of Us, the first one,
mm-hmm.
where it was hard to get over how slow the intro was, mm-hmm. but then once it was where it needed to be, I was in it to win it. And I felt that, except with Red Dead, it was extended because Red Dead's first 12 hours were so boring.
Yeah, that's
I was like, I know you're trying to be a slow burn, but like, holy Christ.
I know a few people.
Deliberate design choices, like, hold down this button to do this. Like, it's like, guys, I get you're trying to immerse me into this whole cowboy experience, but for the love of God, what year is it? What time? How much time do I have in my hands here? Just let me get on the bloody horse. Yeah. I don't care about holding X to get on the bloody horse.
The controls were atrocious. Like, this might be one of the worst Rockstar-controlled games I've ever played.
Well, no. It's not one of the worst Rockstar-controlled games. It's just a Rockstar-controlled games because they're still stuck back, like going on 10, almost 15 years ago with how they lay out their controls.
Yeah. It was just bad. Like, I accidentally shot so many people thinking I was going to try to talk to them. I was like, how do you have them on the same panel? Like, why is it the same button?
I didn't just see you in court. Your Honor, I just wanted to talk to them. I didn't mean to shoot them in the face.
I wanted to see if I could start a conversation with one of the shopkeepers, and I accidentally shot him in the face.
Shopkeeper.
And then when I came back, this is the genius of Rockstar. When I came back, he had a bandage right across where I had shot him, and he was not happy with me.
Yeah.
He remembered that I had shot him in the face, and you couldn't, like, beg for forgiveness or be like, my bad.
I'd heard from quite a few people, actually, that they love the game, but the slowness in the beginning did turn some people off.
It's the biggest frustration.
And almost lost a lot of people. And this is like a bigger argument with gaming in that you want realism. I don't think you want it to be realistic. Yeah. There's a difference between realism and realistic. And it doesn't have to be that slow, that specific, that tedious.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think I saw where they were going with it, where they wanted you to be super immersed in the world. But there were lots of times where I looked at that giant map and there was one thing to do on the whole map.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, really? Like, really? And then you do that one thing, and maybe two things would unlock, but maybe only one thing would unlock. And maybe nothing would unlock until you were in a different time. And I was like, well, what am I going to do now? Why do I have, do I just randomly roam around? How many deers can I kill? Also, the gutting was unnecessarily violent.
Mm.
It was a little overwhelming. Actually, was I playing with somebody? I was showing somebody how you skin the animals, and they were, like, repulsed by the idea of
how realistic it
was.
I really liked it. Like, oh, man, this is, like, so, like, gooey.
But yeah, it was the sound effects to it were too much. I was just like, oh. And I had this problem with it was a Ubisoft game, and I was a little turned off by, maybe it was Far Cry as well. I was a little turned off about the whole, like, skinning of animals in it, but it was one of the many things that I eventually got over and was able to be like, well, I got nothing else to do. And I wanted to learn how to fish. And fishing seemed to take so long to finally get. I'm like, there's water right here. Why can't I unlock fishing? Like, if I'm going to feed this village of crazy people, then I want to feed them fish, not just go out there and be like, hey, here's a deer. I'm going to hunt this down. So I just thought it took way too long to finally get into the story, because that's also what I was there for. I was there to learn more about Arthur. I was there to learn about the Vanderling gang. And other than, like, Dutch yelling at me from time to time or, like, a random quest with one of the other members, I felt like I was getting nowhere until once, I guess, the end of Chapter 3 was when everything picked up.
It was very much like an old John Wayne Western.
Yeah.
Where just, like... Those films were like at least 3.5-4 hours long,
and the first three hours,
it's like, I remember watching those movies with my dad. It's like, why do you like these movies? This
my dad too.
Sucks. Yeah. Like, this is so terrible. Like, they're literally on the prairies talking about how hungry they are for 3 hours, and then finally bandits show up, and John Wayne goes, "Well, I guess I gotta go kill me some bandits," and then that's when it gets good.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you. My dad also loves old-timey Westerns and even just old movies in general, and the pacing is so slow.
Yeah.
And I get that there is nuance to that, but you don't have to have that in video games.
I thought, too, like, going from a charismatic character like John Marston in the first one to having to play as Arthur Morgan, I wanted to like Arthur right away or at least get to know him, and taking 12 hours to finally get to, unlock this character's... any bit of personality was exhausting.
12 is such a big number, man. That's way too long.
The highs of Red Dead, though, are very high, yeah. in my opinion.
Realistically, though, like, Arthur Morgan seems like the kind of guy it would take you months to unlock him as a human being anyway. Because he's very closed off. But yeah, the highs when the highs are there.
Like the train heists.
I wanted so many more. I was like, let's do all of the train heists. I wanted to rob all of the citizens.
Yeah.
Then I felt my moral compass kick in, and I ended up making Arthur a pretty decent guy, even though he's really
nice.
Arthur Morgan is a terrible guy.
You need to go and play this guy like the asshole that he really is.
I kind of want to do that. I want to go back and unlock all of the new conversations. I want to be like,
yeah, he's a natural jerk, and if you play him like a jerk, so much
it'll
more fun.
It'll be rewarding.
Also, moral compass, does that mean you didn't punch any horses?
I accidentally did. I was kicked by a horse once. So,
well, that's what happens when
you probably deserved it.
Oh yeah, and like I said in our previous show, my first horse got run over by a train, so that was a thing. I wasn't super nice to any of the horses.
I like that she says accidentally. Come here, horsey. I'm just gonna leave you on the train tracks.
Well, that was when I realized that the horses didn't regenerate. I was like, oh, so that horse is dead. Well, that was something to learn. But yeah.
There is something about video game characters that don't come back to life. You're like, oh my god, this is too final.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, that was kind of the interesting thing about Detroit Become Human, too. Yeah, you kind of learn the hard way. But yeah, the Red Dead's redeeming characteristics are the characters. Like, Dutch might be one of the most interesting and, like, loathsome bad guys who is also equally charismatic and... And even, like, Micah. Oh, God, I hated Micah so much. Like, I felt so viscerally, it was such a visceral response to how much I hated some of these characters.
Great writing. Like, and as is usual with a Rockstar game.
So good. Yeah. There are some phenomenal characters in this game that I would love to have seen some of them expand onto. Some of them, unfortunately, don't make it to the end of the game, but I thought that some of them... really, like, for the brief bits they were in, were just outstanding.
Is there planned DLC for this game?
It hasn't been discussed.
I'm not sure, but, like, there is Red Dead Online,
They might do what happened with GTA.
Like, GTA Online remains, like, wildly popular as well, right?
Yeah,
so I can only imagine it'll be the same thing for Red Dead Online. I haven't tried it out myself because I have zero interest in playing online multiplayer for, like, Rockstar games, but, like, I can understand the appeal.
I feel like the way that this game ends doesn't really bring itself to the kind of DLC that you would want. It would have to be either completely standalone side characters or secondary character type of things to really expand where it would be possible or even interesting. Like, I feel like the main story wraps up nicely, especially being a prequel, you know what happens to most of the main characters. You know what happens to John. You know what happens to Dutch. You know what happens to the rest of the Vanderling gang. So I feel like maybe...
Which may be why they have an excuse not to do DLC.
Yeah. 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 Except if they do Sadie Adler DLC. Oh my God, I'm in for days about it. She was my favorite character in that game. Other than, you know, Dutch. Because I loved him and hated him. But that's it. I think these are my big three games of the year that I both enjoyed and was frustrated by. Did anybody have any big disappointments of the year? Like when it came to games or just in general?
Well, I didn't play it myself, but like I know there's a huge disappointment about Fallout 76.
Oh, God. I didn't play it either, but I heard from plenty of people who did not enjoy that game.
It
is problem-ridden to the core, apparently.
Which is like, I mean...
So it's a Bethesda game.
but that's the thing, right? It's like, told you so?
Yeah.
Right? Because when it was announced at E3, like were you at the Bethesda conference?
I was at the Bethesda conference.
So I believe we talked about it briefly, like afterwards, but we're like, is this actually going to work? And the answer, I guess, was no.
No, yeah. Was maybe too early to bring it out or too lofty a goal? I don't really know what Bethesda truly did wrong here, but it seems like it's wrong all
I mean,
over the place.
Their any Bethesda game's engine, the bugs, and because it's always buggy to hell, you can't QA that much in such an open world kind of experience, right? So it's charming when you're just by yourself, like, oh, look, that cow is flying. That's really amusing,
yeah.
Right? And then you just press escape and you quick load, right? And you just go about your business because everything reloads, but like, in an online setting, you can't just do that.
No.
And clearly this engine, which I'm guessing they were using the Fallout 4 engine for,
maybe
was not meant for this.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing. But again, what does anybody expect? I mean, I love Bethesda games, but I also come at them with very low expectations. And I also think maybe if it was... you know, about a dozen more patches and it'd probably be pretty playable. Yeah, let's just hope for that. Momin, what about you?
I don't think anything really let me down. I didn't play like as much as I usually do, so everything I played...
City Hall Momin.
Yeah. Yeah, I played We Happy Few, which I was happy with, which I enjoyed. I thought it was good. I played some of the new Tomb Raider, I didn't finish it, but pretty much everything I played I was pretty happy with. I didn't find anything to be a terrible letdown. I also didn't have anything that was like, aside other than Spider-Man, that I was like super, super pumped to play, except for God of War, which I never got around to.
Mm-hmm.
But next year, that's a different story.
Ooh.
And
yeah.
Christine, I mean, like, we've heard about some of your disappointments, but was there more? Was it? Okay. I'll tee it up. Go on the Xbox rant again.
Xbox.
I feel like everybody's heard it before. I did like a couple of games that they played, and I'm looking forward to, I'm hoping for big announcements next year. You know, they made a lot of studio purchases this year and made a lot of...
I thought they had a good E3.
Yeah, they have an optimistic future, I would say, but I'm not excited. I'm just curious and cautiously optimistic that things are going to go turn around for them.
Conversely, if you want to talk about big stories of the year other than Fortnite, I think the other kind of big story this year is that Nintendo had another monster year. That's back-to-back for them. Because, you know, when they put out the Switch last year, it was a huge hit.
March 2017 is when it came out.
It was a huge hit. They needed it because they were kind of starting to... They were slumping really bad. Wii U wasn't great.
Fastest-selling console... fastest-selling console of the current generation between the Xbox... the Xbox One and the PS4. Within a similar time frame of them being out now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Nintendo, had this monster year last year. Huge comeback for them. They really needed it. And I think in our year-end show last year, when we were in our different iteration, one of the things we talked about looking into this year was, can Nintendo do it again?
Yeah, cautiously optimistic. And they did it again.
And they did it again. They put out some great games this year, not withstanding problems with Smash Brothers, and you know, people really loved it. And I know
Smash Brothers is on my favorite, is on my best of list.
And, like, and
if you're a Switch owner, get it.
You know, like Labo came out this year, which was huge with a lot of people. Smash Brothers came out this year. I know a lot of people who got the Switch this year, and they've really hit.
Mario Tennis Aces, very good.
like they've really hit the mark. So I think they had another monster year, and even people who are skeptical or Nintendo haters really can't say a lot about it now because they had another big year.
Keep in mind the games that we're talking about, once again with Nintendo, is first party. The third part, we still don't know yet about the third party support. Like we've seen, we've heard announcements that a lot of third party developers are on board, but they're mostly like Japanese developers, you know, like the Capcoms of the world and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Ubisoft has talked about that too.
Ubisoft, like they're more willing to open themselves up to like. To potentially failing.
Yeah.
Right?
And they and Nintendo have had like a pretty warm relationship. So.
Yeah. But like, will we see, I know we don't necessarily love their games, but will we see more EA support? Will we see more Activision support? I mean, I guess we kind of do because Diablo 3 mm-hmm. is on the Switch.
But again, that's a game that's how many years old though?
Yes, it is a port, right? Yeah. But this is what I mean. This is always the question with Nintendo. Yeah. That's why with Nintendo, it's always like, okay, I have a PlayStation, so I have a PlayStation or an Xbox, and I guess I'll get the Nintendo as my secondary thing. Like, will Nintendo ever be the primary?
Well, here's the thing. Nintendo arguably is the best at first-party titles. You know,
bar none.
Yeah,
it's just like they have the iconic franchises.
Yeah, even though Sony had a monster year this year in terms of first party titles, year over year Nintendo is great because they have Mario and Zelda and Donkey Kong. And
these are the franchises that define video games.
So they don't need third party titles, but they
do. It's nice to have.
Yeah, but they do if they want to become somebody's primary console where they say like, oh, I don't need an Xbox or I don't need a PlayStation. But let me just. Put this out there, and I'm not the first to say this, and I won't be the last. If they ever crack the code and figure it out, Xbox and PlayStation better look out. Because if they get proper third-party support where the big games that come out every year, like a Call of Duty or, you know, any of those kind of big, huge, mammoth titles, and they figure out and they get third-party support, and then they start getting third-party exclusives from other, you know, makers,
look out,
because Nintendo's going to run roughshod over everybody if they can ever crack that code,
which
they have
I'm not
yet.
Entirely sure is possible.
No,
because,
I don't know either.
Because, like the big Western publishers that we're talking about, you know, that really drive the market on these shores, right, and to Europe, and in Europe as well, you know, like people like hyper-realism, mm-hmm. and Nintendo was like straight up. The Switch is nowhere near as powerful as a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One, or let alone an Xbox One X with its like million billion teraflops, right?
Oh, the teraflops.
So
and that is what will always hold it back. But if they can get any semblance of third-party support. It's all gravy for them.
Yeah. Go Nintendo.
Happy 2019. Bye. Goodbye.
Does Nintendo have any big games scheduled for the 2019?
I haven't heard about it yet, but like, they supposedly have Metroid Prime 4 mm-hmm. still in development. They are going to have lots and lots of DLC characters for Smash Ultimate.
Yeah.
And like anytime like a Smash character gets revealed, like if you saw at the Game Awards with Joker from P5,
yep.
People lose their minds. I was one of them. Like I can't wait to play Joker.
Can you wait to unlock him though? That's the question.
Well, if it's a DLC character, that means I pay the money and he is right there.
Mm.
Nintendo, that'd be a great way to do it, buddy. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that out there. You know, think of how much more money you can make.
Fair enough.
I'm not entirely sure. Like what Nintendo has in the pipeline. Like they always hint like, oh, there's a new Zelda in development, right? Okay, there's always a new Zelda in development. It could just be like someone putting something on a piece of paper saying. Zelda, whatever number that we're at here. Right? So, I don't know. So, like, I guess this year we're gonna ask the question again.
Yeah. What's next?
Can Nintendo keep the momentum for year three of the Switch?
Yeah, because at least going into this year, we knew Smash Bros. You know, so we had at least one that was coming.
Yes,
but I don't know.
I can't remember. Anyway, whatever. Nintendo had a big year. That's the point.
Sure did.
And like this next year could potentially, we could potentially start seeing hints for the PlayStation 5 and and the Xbox, I don't know, this would be the Xbox 4, right? Or whatever the hell they want to call it, right?
Yeah, whatever.
I'll call it the Xbox 4.
Whatever the new iteration will be.
Right, so like we could, I mean, that's my expectation, actually, for like E3 or whatever during the year, we're going to start to hear information bubbling about the next generation of consoles.
Yeah, I think you're not far off in that at all. It wouldn't surprise me if we had next consoles coming up in the next couple of years. So, and they have to be announced at some point. So, eek. But what about games for you? What are you looking forward to next year?
Oh boy. Okay. Days Gone. I can't wait, can't wait, can't wait, can't wait,
can't
wait.
This is a big year for you, 2019.
Yeah, Days Gone is a game that we saw teased a couple years ago when we were at E3.
It was supposed to be out this year.
Yep, and it got pushed back to April, so I'm super pumped about that. Also, no question, Last of Us 2. I'm all in for pretty much anything Naughty Dog does. I love Last of Us 1. Not a secret that Uncharted is my favorite series of all time. So to see Joel and Ellie back, is he dead? Is he not dead? What's the deal? Is she going to avenge his death? He's dead. He's totally dead. I'm super pumped to see what happens. So those are my one and two for sure for next year.
Yeah. What about, do you think we'll see Beyond Good and Evil 2 this year?
Yes. Yeah. 2019, Beyond Good and Evil 2. Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah.
At long last, coming out January 29th. So the end of the month, basically. That's, man, it's been a long time coming. It's like a surreal experience.
Both of those games.
Both of those
are a long time coming.
Yeah. Other than those two, like there's a few other kind of cool Sony exclusives, like that Sekiro Shadows, like ninja action game.
Oh, yeah, the one that I, yep.
Yeah, the one that you had the really great E3, Sony E3 experience for.
Yeah, and I kept calling it the wrong name.
Yeah,
and then
Momo and I and the rest of us suckers at home were like, this is the dumbest Sony E3 like press conference experience of all time. Yeah, why am I waiting?
You had to be there for it. I was just waiting for Norman Reedus. That's all it needed was some Death Stranding. Which
yeah,
is
Death Stranding.
Out
that supposedly comes out in 2019.
Yeah, did you see that tweet the other day that it's online? It's an online experience? I was like,
So we all carry our babies.
What's with the baby? What's with the baby?
This game is
Joel dead?
Suck.
These are the questions we have for 2019.
Here's my bold prediction for 2019. Death Stranding is going to be among the worst games we play all year.
Here's my bold prediction. Joel is dead and he comes back as a baby in Death Stranding.
That's actually a viable theory with how terrible Death Stranding keeps looking every time they reveal more information about this game.
It looks weird.
Well, yeah.
But I just got to know. Just got to know what it's about. Realistically, I'm not looking forward to, like, there's nothing really on my radar for next year. I'm excited, like I said, to see what Xbox is going to do, but, I mean, not excited, but I'm curious. But really, like, nothing's really on my radar other than I'll definitely play Last of Us 2. But
I'm trying to think about E3 because I just remember I was...
Will E3 even be a thing next year?
Oh, God, yeah. That is a good question because more and more... somebody pulled out recently and
Sony.
Right. And so, like, is E3 a thing anymore?
Well, are they going to do what Xbox is and just have, you know, hang out in the Microsoft
Theater?
So
then
and do
why
like
would
a-
anyone bother to rent out that convention space?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right?
It's interesting because going... So the thing is... It still makes sense for gamers and gaming media to go to Los Angeles because all the stuff is still there.
I don't think it makes as much sense for gaming media to go anymore.
No, I think it does because they're all still there. EA is still there. Microsoft is still there. Sony is still there. They're just not in the convention center. So maybe it doesn't make sense to get a pass for the convention center anymore or buy a ticket. But they're all there still storing off their stuff. They just don't want to be part of the actual convention floor. Like EA's and Microsoft is literally across the street. So... Yeah. It's interesting. It's a big change.
It makes for 'tis
not what it was.
Makes for much easier strolling around, though.
Yes.
And it was cool to see some of the AAAs get bigger displays. When you take out some of the behemoths, there's a lot more floor space other places to really show themselves off in a sassy way. Do you think we'll see any, like, new tech or anything this year? Like, the VR is no longer really a thing anymore?
I mean, I don't know what's on the horizon tech-wise. I mean, I hope they can still do something with VR just to see what they can do, but I haven't touched that.
Ship may have sailed. You were the only PlayStation VR owner that I know.
Colin got one.
Okay.
I don't think he did. I certainly did not pay for mine.
He got it as a gift, I believe.
Yeah, and so did I, because my brother-in-law worked for a company that gave it to them as their Christmas bonus, and he's like, I don't have a PlayStation, so we can play it when you're at your house. And I was like, okay. And we played it once, and it sits there now.
There you go.
So, as far as new tech goes, it'll just be like the gajillion teraflops of the new Xbox, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Look how much more realistic, like, Cristiano Ronaldo's or like Messi's eyebrows are in FIFA 20.
Yeah.
You know? I swear, that's what it's going to be.
That's true. I would say, just before we go, I feel we have to give a shout out to the RIP Telltale.
Mm-hmm.
That was perhaps the saddest part of this year for me game-wise. I was looking forward to at least two or three of their games coming up, and I didn't see this coming. Kind of bowled me over when I saw that happening.
That certainly was out of nowhere, and it's too bad because in a world where...
In a world where we
get the same games over and over, Telltale brought us something new and different. And they took a lot of franchises where when I heard Telltale was making, I was like, really? Like Batman, for example. Mm-hmm. They made two great Batman games.
Yep.
They did Wolf Among Us.
Oh, I was so looking forward to Wolf Among Us, too.
Unfortunately, they just didn't sell enough, apparently.
What's the one with Claptrap? Borderlands?
Tales from the Borderlands was so good.
Borderlands is good. They did Game of Thrones.
They did Minecraft.
They did Walking Dead.
Minecraft
was fun. Not all of them were home runs, but a few of them were huge home runs, and they did really good jobs with it, and they made really interesting games, and they were a studio that was able to put a different take on a lot of it. So even with Batman, where I was like, really? Like a Batman heavy combat game? They had elements of combat in it, but the storyline and the way they played it out actually worked really well. It was great. Wolf Among Us was a huge hit for them.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a bummer to see a creative sort of everybody else is over here and we're outside the box kind of studio go away.
Just collapse.
Yeah, and it was very surprising because I thought they were doing well.
I'm guilty of this as well, but like, I bought most of my Telltale games via Steam sales, like summer sales, blah blah blah. Just like it was always like the game would come out, and then like I'll wait in 6 months because it's guaranteed going to be at least 50% off during the Steam summer sale, right, or the Steam holiday sale, and that's what happened. And I feel like I'm not the only person who was thinking, had that like thought process.
True, and that way you don't have to wait for 6 months to have each episode.
That's another common philosophy. People were like, oh, all these episodes are coming out for The Walking Dead, like season one, season two, right? I'll just wait until all five are out, and then there will be a season bundle pack sale, right? Yeah. Like basically the moral of what I'm trying to get to is that like, I don't know how many people immediately went out and paid full price for a Telltale game.
Yeah. I did occasionally.
You know, like, it just...
I think
most people viewed their games as almost just kind of like the side project.
Mm-hmm.
As you play your main game, and like, oh, there's that story thing that I'll just, like, get through because I'm kind of curious about the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's not what I'm really actually playing here for real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is too bad because they had some fun projects and they had some really good games and... You know, it's just a bummer. Like, it's a bummer when it's a big small studio.
Bummer with a capital B?
With a capital B.
And two cheeks.
So hopefully all good gaming things for 2019. And what are you looking forward to, listeners? Shoot us off a tweet at Gaming in the Six and tell us your highs, your lows, your best game of the year, your biggest disappointment. Share it with us. Maybe we'll talk about it in the New Year episodes. So for the last time for 2018, I am Christine Chubb. That is Steve Lung and Momin Qureshi. Have yourself an awesome New Year, and you'll hear from us again in 2019.
Bye.